My Lord and my God, I firmly believe that you are here, that you see me, that you hear me. I adore you with profound reverence. I ask your pardon for my sins and the grace to make this time of prayer fruitful. My Immaculate Mother, Saint Joseph, my Father and Lord, my guardian angel, intercede for me. On leaving the synagogue, says the Gospel, Jesus entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. He was invited, you, my Lord, invited to a house for maybe for lunch or dinner. And Simon's mother-in-law lay sick with fever. They immediately told him about her, and then he approached, grasped her hand, and helped her up. And then the fever left her. And this is the first miracle. When it was evening, after sunset, they brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. And the whole town was gathered at the door. Maybe hundreds, we don't know. And he cured them, who were sick with various diseases, and he drove out demons, not permitting them to speak. And then you wonder, how is this happening? What's the making of these miracles? Where is the source of your power, Jesus? Rising very early, before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. That's the key thing here. All the activity, all the performance, so to speak, of Jesus Christ's life has a root in prayer. And Simon and those who were with him went after him, and then on finding him said, everyone is looking for you. You know, Jesus, you don't have a second, you don't have a break. And then he told them, let us go to the nearby villages that I may preach there also, because for that purpose have I come. And again, you see, this is kind of a, in our culture, this would be like a maybe a Snapchat or some Instagram moment, video, a day in the life of Jesus in 30 seconds with those images. And then you think, how in this Snapchat, in this video, Jesus, how do I understand, or what's the, it's so beautiful, no? And then you say, how do you do that? The answer is because the life of Jesus was meaningful. And at that meaning was rooted or permeated by a sacrifice. It was not just an easy life. It was really demanding. But you see, our Lord giving himself with freedom. And I don't know if you have seen these days the video that is in the Opus Dei website about the visit of the Father. You can see people happy, just basically happy. I mean, you cannot watch that video and not to smile or to feel better. It's just it's contagious, right? And I was wondering, my Lord, this is what your life is about, impacting other people's lives. The topic of this meditation is sacrifice. And sacrifice has a bad reputation, right? So, oh, sacrifice, no. It's not Lent, yes, or whatever. But sacrifice is the father, the prelate of Opus Dei in that video, answering one of the questions, says, when you and I take the cross, like Jesus Christ, we are imitating, we're following the supreme act of freedom, which is to love something that you don't like. And that's a sacrifice. And then Jesus, my Lord, sometimes I'm scared about sacrifice. I always get defensive. And maybe it's because I don't give meaning to my sacrifice. I was reading the other day, there was an article about millennials. I don't want to offend anybody. But they were saying that the millennials, among other things, they have many virtues. One of the maybe things that are lacking is the capacity of risking out of fear. And I don't think it's fear what stops anybody or security. I don't think that's what a millennial or anybody else kind of feels when stopped. What really stops you is the lack of meaning. What really blocks me, Jesus, is not risking my securities, because when I have a goal that is worth following, I jump out of my whatever security comfort zone easily, because if I have a meaning, that moves me into action or to commitment or whatever it is. So maybe the point here with sacrifice, my Lord, instead of doing more things or examining myself, is just giving meaning. That's the first thing, to connect my sacrifice with your cross, with your eternal sacrifice. It's not a matter of doing more difficult things. It's basically going deeper in why should I do this? And then asking myself, why should I do this? Honestly, Jesus, why should I take the cross? And the answer is not just in a minute. The answer is something that builds up inside you, inside me, over the years. I was thinking, watching that video, for example, and imagine that you had the capacity of traveling through time and space, and you take that clip that takes nothing like a paint dry for a little video, and then you go back to the 30s in Spain, and you go to a Spaniard woman, Guadalupe, in 1939 after the Civil War, and then you go on a random Tuesday or Monday morning to Guadalupe. And then you appear in her room. Hey, Guadalupe, how are you doing? And then Guadalupe is, you know, whatever. She's working on something, or it's just going to, you know, to do the visit to the Blessed Sacrament, or she's trying to, you know, whatever. And you say, hey, Guadalupe, you know what? I'm going to show you something that has to do with you. And then she looks at you like, where are you coming from? And then you put that video. And you tell her, you know, there are two people in Opus Dei, in the woman's side after the Civil War, one of you is you, and then 14 guys. And I know that now it sounds very crazy, but in a few years, look at the impact of your life. And then you show to Guadalupe a bunch of gringos smiling, being with the prelate, talking about schools, talking about initiatives, families, and flags, and music, and testimonies, and the paralytic saying, I'm offering this for you, and a young girl saying, you know, it's so inspiring to have the teachings of San Jose Maria. And then you see that video for Guadalupe. And Guadalupe says, wow, is this the impact of my life? Now, Jesus, my Lord, in this present moment, redemption is still going on. And the video of 2070 will be connected to my life now. Or the year 200, you know, 2,300 years or whatever, is connected to what I'm doing now. I'm connected to your cross. I'm connected to Abraham. I'm connected to, you know, the creation of the world. And this is meaningful. And it gives me peace to know that it's meaningful, that I have something that is worth living and also is in itself is an encounter with you. Sacrifice is an encounter with you. And then when I examine my fidelity, my commitment with you is a commitment of love. When I pray the rosary, when we pray the rosary, we say, O God, whose only begotten Son by his life, death, and resurrection has purchased for us the rewards of eternal life. And sometimes we say those words so quickly, but there is something there very, very big. We are saying, O God, that through the life, death, and resurrection of your Son, you have bought me. You paid for me eternal life. And then we continue with our prayer, like, hey, I want to consider, I want to meditate on these mysteries of the rosary in order to have a light, to receive this light, to grow in my understanding of the beauty of my vocation. And the good news, my Lord, is that my fidelity then becomes creative. Becomes part of something that is beautiful. I remember I went to Texas for my course, and one of the excursions days we went to this Nimitz Museum, which is like a couple of hours north of Houston. And this is a museum about the Pacific War. I don't know if you are interested in that, but I wasn't that much into the whole thing. But anyway, we went there. And I was really, really impressed because you have all the battles, Guadalcanal, Midway, Okinawa, and then every room is so well done. and you have maps, videos, pictures, sound, and you can touch it, and okay, you can move the things, you can, and you get into the battles, you get into the, and then one of the things that I realized, and it's very shocking when you go to one of those war museums, the same happened to me when I went to the Memorial Museum in New York, the September 11, you see faces, real people. Some of them are looking at the camera, and then you feel like they're looking at you from eternity, in a way, right? And they're, some of them, wounded. Some of them, they are dead. And you see what? Those guys were fighting for something that they didn't see. The freedom that they conquered came later. In the middle of the battle, everything was disgusting and tough and really, I mean, heroic. But they did it. They said, it's not just about me. I'm making history here. And I'm not promoting wars or anything like that, far from me doing such a thing. But at the same time, you can see something beautiful there, that they were seeing beyond themselves. And this is what happens when I discover your cross, Jesus. I'm seeing beyond myself, beyond my problems. When I go to Mass, I am part of this Snapchat, Instagram video that we saw about your life in these few lines in the Gospel of St. Mark, chapter number 1. Jesus healing, and not healing in a spectacular way. First the mother-in-law, then in the house, then dinner, then people come, sick people, people possessed, and Jesus imposing his hands on them. The following morning, praying, going outside, recollecting himself, and then having redemption at the center of his heart. My Lord, I really want to be part of this redemption that you are bringing to the world. I want to be not the protagonist in a vain way, but I want to be part of those videos about Catholics that go throughout history. Videos in the sense of images of happy people throughout history. I am connected with them. I don't want to be indifferent. This is what Pope Francis keeps saying. We cannot live in an indifferent mode or in a world that is just far from each other. Nearby my house, there's a new homeless now. I didn't stop yet to say hi or to talk to him. But the other day I was stuck into traffic, far from him anyway, so I was thinking about that guy. And now he's probably, you know, whatever, 5-something feet tall, African-American, big guy. I don't know his name, but he's there every day. And I was thinking 30 years ago or whatever, 40, that guy was a baby. A cute baby, you know, like a, was it like anybody else in the world. Like you started as a baby, and then he was a nice baby, and then later he was 2 years old baby, or kid, or children, and then he would be smiling and making noises like oh, let the babies do and whatever, and playing with a ball or with a whatever, and opening his eyes for music and falling to the ground, very cute, very like a nice kid. And then I pressed a stop in his movie, and I thought, what happened to you? Who abandoned you? What's your story? How did you end up in the streets of Chicago in a cold winter without the love of a house, of a family? What happened to you? And I don't know. I don't know the answer. I need to ask him, and I will probably one of these days. Not that I want to examine him or to investigate or whatever. No, but just... what happened to you? And this is what Pope Francis, I think, and Jesus Christ in this gospel we just read, is trying to convey to the world, that the sacrifice of the cross is about, you know, giving ourselves to others. Is the San Jose Maria said, Jesus, your Mass is the center and the root of my interior life. It is just there. It's the center of everything. It's like a magnet, like a gigantic magnet in my interior life that attracts everything there. A magnet that is at the same time a filter that purifies my thoughts, my intentions, my ideals. Everything is just transformed by your cross. It's not destroyed. It's not changed in the sense of a burgundy. No, it's just transformed to better, like gilded or whatever, through the cross. and every single sacrifice, every single act of love, then has, you know, a higher meaning, scope, which is redemption, redemption, redemption. And I can then, Jesus, with my imagination and with my heart especially, go with you to pray early in the morning, to recollect myself and to say, what am I doing with my life, Jesus? What am I doing today? Or what did I do tomorrow? And then say, okay, I want to help you. I want to go to my workshop, to my office, whatever. And then to say, how can I help you to redeem the world? And sometimes I will feel the temptation of indifference, or maybe discouragement or whatever. And then I will drink from the clear waters of your cross, of the sacrifice in the Mass, and say, no, the Eucharist is the answer. Your fidelity here, your creative fidelity, gives me strength. Gives me, you know, the impulse to go out. And then I will contemplate the church, the little boat of the church in the sea of history, making its way through waves, storms, and with the strength of the Eucharist. I'm not super big into Twitter, but the other day I saw this tweet by Robert George, this professor at Princeton, and he was saying, what is common among Elizabeth Anscombe, Oscar Wilde, Alasdair MacIntyre, Walker Percy, and John Wayne, and many other names? And I was like, what? Like Anscombe with John Wayne, what is going on? And then I realized I didn't know some of the names, and then I Googled them. And all of them are converts to the Catholic faith, all of them. And it was like more names that I don't remember now. You know, philosophers, scientists, writers, actors, you know, everything. And I just thought, man, it's the same thing I was telling you about the video of the Prelate of Opus Dei in this country, and then going back in time to the Spaniards in the 30s saying, hey, if you keep your fidelity later, great things will happen. And then you go back in history and you go to Abraham and you say, hey, you're in your comfort zone at Ur, which is your little town, but if you get out of there and then look at the stars and you say yes to me, says God, your descendants will be like the sand in the beaches, or like the waters, like stars in the galaxies. And it's going to be varied and powerful and beautiful, and it's going to be a constellation of different people, of races and different people of backgrounds. And then he said yes. But he didn't see it. And all the saints in history, Saint Ignatius, Saint Jose Maria, all of them started things that went beyond their lifetime. I mean, some of them saw something, but not the whole thing. And the whole thing is going to be seen only in heaven, when I, Jesus, will be able to see the connection between all the lives, all touching each other, the influence, the communion of saints. What a beautiful thing to be Catholic. What a beautiful thing to go to Mass. Like a refuge. My Mass is a refuge. It's a place so sacred, so fresh, so new. It's a place where I meet you in eternity. I connect myself to your eternal sacrifice, and I connect my day, the little things of my day, my effort to smile, to forgive, to look, you know, to others with the eyes of mercy, to begin again, to be humble, in spite of my failures or whatever, to say, okay, Jesus forgives me, Jesus takes me. And I may be like Simon of Cyrene, that is coming back, is distracted, I don't want to take this cross, but okay, come on, help a little bit, and then I take it, and then Jesus says, your sons will be Catholics. And you just bought eternity for your family, because you just helped me a little bit with my cross. Or maybe I want to be like the Veronica, Jesus, with atonement, washing your face with my acts of love, whatever it is. Or I be like St. John, scared but close to Mary, not understanding the whole thing, but at the same time giving myself to you because I love you and I don't understand, but I love you and I stay there. Let's put ourselves there. close to the cross, close to Jesus. And let's think about the saints in history. I don't know if you have read this book by Bishop Van Tuan. He was, I think, 13 years or so in a concentration camp in Vietnam run by the communists. And in the beginning of the book, he says that he was really upset with God. Again, because they were suffering, but there was a meaning. And he was rebellious, saying, why did you put me here? I didn't want to be a bishop if that was the deal. I was supposed to be taking care of people, and now I'm in a concentration camp. And what's the point of this? You're not using my life well. He was telling to God in a way, like, you know. And then, little by little, his eyes became, you know, cleaner to see reality and to embrace it. And he was okay. I gotta do something here. And then he says that after years or months, maybe, he explains his deal. In the re-education camp, in the concentration camp, we were divided into groups of 50 people. And we slept in a common bed. And everyone had the right for 4 feet of space. At 9:30 p.m., we had to turn off the lights and everyone had to go to sleep. It was then that I would bow over the bed to celebrate Mass by heart. And there was no altar, no candles, no nothing. And then in other parts of the book, he explains that he would put the wine in one hand directly on his palm and the hosts on the other. And just starting the Mass by heart, right there, surrounded by 5 people, 4 people. I mean, there were 50, but if he would put the Catholics around him, okay, let's say, I'm going to say Mass. With 3 drops of wine and a drop of water in the palm of my hand. This was my altar, and this was my cathedral. I distributed communion by passing my hand under the mosquito net. We even made little sacks from the paper of cigarette packs to preserve the Most Holy Sacrament and bring it to others. The Eucharistic Jesus was always with me in my shirt pocket. Everyone knew that Jesus was in their midst. At night, the prisoners would take turns for adoration. Now, again, let's pause. Okay, wait a second. Let me digest. Let me think about what you just said, Van Tuan. So you're there for 13 years, and then suddenly the Mass transforms you. And you start, you know, bringing Jesus back to this world, to a world that is not only imperfect or whatever, it's a disaster, but Jesus still comes through the miracle of the consecration, the transubstantiation, the reality of Jesus in the midst of a concentration camp. And then you start bringing it to others, to sick people. Everybody knows that. And then adoration at night. Sometimes we complain, oh, I'm going to organize an adoration for my friends, and then nobody's going to come. Hey, listen, maybe it's because we lack faith. Maybe it's because we don't realize, and we need to make a, I want to atone, and to make atonement to you, Jesus, because I mean, there is no worse scenario than a concentration camp run by the communists. And there is precisely where the light of Jesus shines. And in other parts of the book, he says that they organized catechesis for Buddhists, for Christians. People would receive baptism. This is the power of the sacrifice of the hidden life of Jesus in the Eucharist, of your sacrifice on the cross, Jesus. And this is also my life. So help me, my Lord, to give meaning to everything I do, the meaning of love. Then I will have pain. I will be in darkness sometimes. I will experience frustrations, human reactions, all the above. But meaning will transform my life. The meaning of a life given to God. I was reading a book about the Eucharist, and I didn't know that at the beginning the words of the Eucharist were more, when the early Christians would say Mass, the consecration words, the words that the priest would say, were, take, eat, this is my body, we shall be destroyed for you. Later, through the translations, we lost a little bit that meaning because we say deliver, right? Or given. But it's not given in the sense of distributed to you, or given in the sense of a deliver. It's more given to death. And originally it was destroyed for you. So take my body that will be destroyed for you. So imagine a priest saying that today. Consecration. He's saying that, but with those words. And then that's the price of my happiness, of my eternity. If I can, like Abraham, look at the sky and see a constellation, a galaxy of saints, all of them happy, all of them with hope, all of them lived their lives here in a beautiful way, is because Jesus Christ gave himself. And that eternal sacrifice is so powerful that it's like an atomic bomb of grace throughout history that keeps hitting hearts in a good way to transform them, to purify them, to clean them, to heal. And good news, you can be part of that atomic bomb of grace. I thank you, my God, for the good resolutions, affections, and inspirations that you have communicated to me in this meditation. I ask your help to put them into effect. My Immaculate Mother, Saint Joseph, my Father and Lord, my guardian angel, intercede for me.